in Lexington, Kentucky, investigators say a woman named Mary Alice Wolfe hired Savage to kill her ex-husband's new wife, Victoria Barshear. Savage sent Dutra, Buckley, and DeLuca to do the job, but it never got done. After seeing Barshear, the hired killers decided she was too pretty to kill and left town. But Dana Free was still unfinished business. And at 3 a.m. on October 12th, William Buckley, the man who had already messed up earlier chances at Free, as well as Norwood and Barshear, threw two grenades into a house in Pasadena, Texas. No one was hurt in the explosion, and Free wasn't even there. The home belonged to his ex-wife and 14-year-old son, who were inside asleep when the grenades came crashing through the living room window. The gang's next assignment was potentially the most lethal they ever attempted. On October 30th, at Dallas-Fort Worth International Airport, an American Airlines flight from Austin, with 154 people on board, was taxiing toward the terminal when a small bomb exploded in the luggage hold. Passengers were rushed off the plane, scared but unhurt. Investigators found the remains of a time bomb in luggage belonging to passenger Mary Thielman. She had been meant to die, presumably along with the rest of the passengers. A month later, authorities charged Thielman's husband, Albert, with the crime. It would be a year before they would charge William Buckley with selling him the bomb. In October, Richard Savage began receiving calls from a man in Palm Beach County, Florida. The man, Robert Spearman, said that he had this problem. He was married and didn't want to be, but he didn't want a divorce. On October 16th, Savage flew to Palm Beach to meet Spearman and take a $2,000 down payment on a $20,000 contract to kill Spearman's 48-year-old wife, Anita. 5 days later, Savage sent Sean Dutra and Ronald Emmert, another associate from the Continental Club, to West Palm Beach to collect the balance. In the weeks after Dutra and Emmert left with the money, Robert Spearman placed several more calls to the Continental Club. Authorities would later charge that these were calls to find out what was happening on the deal and to demand quick service from Savage. Whatever they were for, Spearman no longer needed to call after the early hours of November 16th. On that morning, after Spearman had exited his Palm Beach Gardens home to drop by his marine contracting company's office, Sean Dutra entered the house through an unlocked door and found Anita Spearman, who was recovering from a mastectomy, asleep. Dutra beat her to death as she lay on her bed. A short time later, Robert Spearman came home to find his wife dead and the house ransacked. He quickly called the sheriff's department, portraying himself as a grieving husband. It was an act authorities would not take long to see through. There were all these victims, all these bizarre crimes, but seemingly nothing that linked them. This widespread dispersal of investigative effort should have ensured the gang's getaway, but it wasn't to be. For in addition to having bungled many of their murder attempts, the hitmen had operated in a way that belied the very promises of their classified ad. The ad stated they would be discreet and very private, but they had rented cars, kept receipts, made long-distance phone calls, made themselves memorable to witnesses. They ran out on bills, kept stolen weapons, and carried large quantities of cash. They left high-powered weapons displayed on the seats of their cars. And most of all, they talked too much. This is how discreet and private Sean Dutra was. The day after he killed Anita Spearman, he was stopped by police in Maryville, Tennessee, for a traffic violation. On the back seat of his car was a 12-gauge shotgun, stolen from Spearman's house the morning of the murder.
End of Disc 5.